Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace, and this is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. We'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there's inspiration from quitlet authors, experts, and sober heroes. Hi, welcome to the podcast. This is Genuinely Grace, and apologies to anyone who usually catches the podcast as soon as it's released, because it's a little bit later than usual. I've just had a hugely busy week, and I've just been presenting the Federation of Holistic Therapists conference in London. Really great event, also their Excellence Awards. But the actual conference bit was just really fascinating. I mean, I've been a fan of holistic therapies and integrated therapeutic treatments and medicine for years. But it was great to see and experience some of the speakers that they'd brought together for this conference. And one thing that kind of really came across, it really, really kind of touched me thinking about all the work that, you know, I'm doing now and all the stuff that's close to my heart, was just hearing from the medical profession, from the kind of practitioners and GPs there, as to just what a difference complementary and integrated therapies can make. And also the whole thing of social prescribing, you know, just the importance of connection for people. It was so fascinating. There was a Dr. Fiona Holland gave a really interesting talk on body image, you know, the impact of negative body image, which was really fascinating. I'm definitely going to be looking more into her work, because I really see for myself how that impacts on everyone. And I suppose we tend to think particularly women, although I think men are affected as well. But there were some just unbelievable stats, particularly around young people. I mean, it was something ridiculous, like something like 80% of women are on a diet at any one time, and about 60% are unhappy with their body image. And you know, you only got to look at those kind of stats, and then with young people, there's been a huge rise in cosmetic procedures. And I think they interviewed or they did some stats around GCSE students, and there was a high percentage of GCSE students that just wouldn't go to school because they were unhappy with their body image. It's unbelievably sad. And of course, the very next part of that equation is that this has got a much greater, leads to a much greater likelihood of substance abuse. You know, it's not rocket science, is it, to look at that. And then later in the stats, they were looking at people who were more satisfied, in inverted commas, with their body image. And those people had much less illness, and you know, a greater immunity, much more resilience, much less substance abuse. It's, you know, this stuff is not rocket science when you think about it, but it was really powerful to hear that said again on that on that stage, you know, at the event I was at today. And then there was a really fascinating doctor, a GP, Dr. Laura Marshall Andrews, and she's really passionate about patient-centered care and about integrated medicine. And it was so fascinating to hear her talk. I mean, you know, you've heard me speak about my frustration with GPs in the UK, and the fact that it's not their fault. I mean, it's absolutely not their fault, but they, you know, they don't get enough training in nutrition, for example. But quite apart from that, they're just so massively overstretched. And she was explaining that the funding that is available per person, per GP, if you like, in the UK is ridiculously small. It equates to, you know, what would be the cost of one GP visit per year max. And of course, the reality is, you know, the average person visits their GP at least five times a year. And of course, some people far more than that. But the really important bit of all of this was that GPs have got 10 minutes, you know, 10 minutes with a person. And as she said, it's usually pretty easy to identify that the person sitting in front of you, okay, they may be coming in and reporting that they've got back pain or a rash or a headache or whatever it is. But it's not rocket science to see that actually they're lonely or isolated or suffering from grief or relationship issues. You know, all of this stuff, which, you know, a pill isn't actually going to solve. But what else can they do in 10 minutes? And this obviously leads on to the fact that the centres and the initiatives that are doing this really well are really involved in social prescribing. They've got a proper social prescription, if you like, service there. And in Laura's case, she's been working at the Brighton Health and Wellbeing Centre, which is based next to several estates. It's not the easiest neighbourhood to be in, but they've just had the most incredible results because they're now offering complementary treatments and therapies. And I think they're free of charge to people on low incomes or homeless people. And apparently it's just made the most incredible difference. And you can see why. You can absolutely see why, because people feel valued and can start to get a little bit of an insight or just a glimmer of hope into what, you know, self-care might look like or somebody else saying, you know, doing something nice for you. So it was what a day. It was both kind of inspirational and really frustrating. So it was massively inspirational in the sense that I got a glimpse of the incredible work that the medical profession do and the therapists and practitioners. And I got this glimpse of what could be. I mean, what could absolutely be if this were rolled out across the whole of the UK, if people had access to these you know, just another way of feeling connected. I mean, there were lots of stats. I haven't got them in front of me, but lots of stats around loneliness. It's absolutely astonishing how there is a direct link between isolation and loneliness and all kinds of health problems and early death. Just a direct correlation. You know, this thing that I'm always banging on about, the opposite of addiction is connection. I mean, it is so true. Of course, I'm not suggesting that all of these people have addictions, but you can absolutely see why that might be the next step. And, you know, there but for the grace of God, many of us listening to this are not in that situation. You know, we've got families and friends, but still within the thing that you're going through, if you're going through ditching the booze or trying to come off drugs, that can feel really, really lonely if you haven't got other people who, you know, connect with what it is you're going through. So, you know, if I wasn't before, I was really, really struck today by the importance of just making people feel valued and just finding somebody that understands, you know, where you're at with whatever you're going through. So keep a look out. I'm sure I'll write a few blog posts. There's definitely some stuff from today that I really want to write about and share some of the statistics and some of the really interesting stuff with you. What else has been going on? There's been quite a lot in the Sober Club in our Facebook group this week. People have been noticing that with all the kind of, you go to school plays or whatever it might be, and there's all the alcohol that's on offer there. It's quite staggering. Somebody in the group was saying that kids were encouraged to bring something to a school raffle or whatever it was. And of course, there's all the little kids clutching bottles of alcohol and, oh gosh, and I went to something at one of my kids' schools, and you know, all that was available to drink in the break was cans of Coke, and there were bottles of water, in fairness, and wine, and that's it. And you just think, my goodness, what kind of message is it sending? It's just sending the message that that's what all adults do all of the time. I was reminded of Annie Grace when she was on my podcast last week or the week before, whenever it was, saying, you know, what would she like to see happen within a year? I think I asked her, and she said, you know, she would like to see that non-drinking becomes as normal as drinking. Wow, wouldn't that be a thing? Really would be amazing, wouldn't it? Anyways, on to today's podcast, mentioning Annie Grace. My guest today is one of Annie Grace's coaches with This Naked Mind. Simon Chappell is the author of The Sober Survival Guide. I love having guys on the podcast. Sometimes we can have a run of women for ages, and it's lovely to introduce some guys as well. Actually, I'm going to have a run of guys because I've got the medicinal chef coming up, Dale, as well. And Darren's going to be on the podcast. So, yeah, it's great to have a mix. I'm so lucky to have some amazing guests. So I really hope you'll enjoy this interview. It's Simon Chappell. Simon, so lovely to be able to chat to you. You've been doing some amazing things, author of The Sober Survival Guide. And I know that you work with Annie Grace, and we like Annie Grace a lot for all the amazing work that she's done about changing the conversation around alcohol, really. So tell us your story and how you got to be doing the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I was a daily wine drinker for 20 years plus. 2-3 bottles a day. It crept up on me like it does for so many of us. I started drinking when I was about 14 or 15. My dad used to drink a fancy French red wine, and I used to pester him for a glass. Before long, he was letting me have it with my dinner, and that evolved into me taking the bottle to the remains of the bottle to my bedroom. And then I was getting my own alcohol, going to the pubs underage with my friends. And from there, it just turned into this habit. And I think I was drinking to deal with feelings of loneliness, insecurity, and this growing anxiety that I was feeling inside of myself. I got to 25, moved into my first house with my wife, and that was where my drinking really escalated to a new level. And I was stocking up on wine all the time, stressing if I didn't have enough for the evening. I started drinking wine boxes because I was aware she'd become conscious about how much I was drinking. Plus, they're so much easier to get rid of in the...
You can hide the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. You can burn them. And on it went. I was just in this trap, in this cycle. And eventually, I found This Naked Mind by Annie Grace, and I read the book, and I was hooked, which I have a habit of getting hooked on things, but that was something good to get hooked on. And there were things in that book that once you'd read them, I felt like I couldn't unlearn them. There were things I knew that I could never not know this stuff again. And it really did start to change my mindset about drinking. And it kicked me on. And I then got myself a journal and started writing down and becoming mindful about my drinking, really kind of curious about when I was drinking, exactly how it was for me, how it felt for me, what my emotions were. And after many, many failed attempts at getting through one day without drinking, I finally managed to do it and crept onto a second day and a third. I won't go into all the tears and the meltdowns that happened in the lead up to that, but there were plenty. And from there, I started blogging and set up a website to kind of share my story. I'd written everything down in a journal before, so I just wanted to do it differently. And I set up besober.co.uk and just started posting on there as I was going forward. And I really felt at this point in my life, I'd made one firm decision to quit alcohol. I felt like I'd got divorced from a toxic relationship and it was over. And I really knew in my heart I was never going back at that point. And the more time went by, the more insignificant and unimportant alcohol started feeling to me. So people started visiting the website and commenting and connecting with me. So on the back of that, I started a Facebook group, a private community for sober people. I remember when I had the first member join, and it was just me and one other person in this group, and it's now got around 7,000 members and is one of the fastest growing online sober communities in the world, which is incredible. And as I went on the journey, I also asked Annie Grace if she would do an interview for the blog, which she actually agreed to, which I was a little bit starstruck when I actually interviewed her, because her book had changed my life. So we did an interview, and on the back of that, she actually asked me if I'd considered working as an alcohol coach from my own experiences and, you know, what This Naked Mind had taught me. And I ended up going over to the States, training with Annie, and since then I've gone on to be a senior This Naked Mind alcohol coach, which is one of the most awesome things that I've ever done.
Amazing. Can I just back up just for a moment and just ask you, you know, at the beginning when you as you say, you describe it, the trap really well, and this is exactly how I felt. I felt as though I was in a trap, and it was off and on, and what do you do, what don't you do? It's a really fascinating thing. And I had this very conversation with Annie Grace, and I was saying to her, you know, we're sort of otherwise pretty intelligent people, fairly bright, you know, we can get on with stuff, we're high functioning, and yet this thing that is alcohol that keeps us in a trap, it's quite bizarre, the conditioning that we've all had. And then the second bit of that is that we've also been conditioned. I mean, things are changing, but we have certainly in the past been conditioned to think that there is only one way out of that. And the only way out of that is to accept that you are at rock bottom and go to AA, which I absolutely did not resonate with me. And so it's only in recent years, you know, thankfully with the work you're doing and the work I'm doing and loads of other people, that we now know there are many different ways, and there is a whole world out there. But for you at the beginning, Where did you sit on that kind of path before you discovered This Naked Mind, which of course opens up the whole new world? What were your thoughts around what possibilities were there for you?
Yeah, I absolutely, what you just said completely resonates with my own experience. I thought that the only way out was Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought that's all there was. And I had explored it, not deeply as in attending meetings, but I'm not religious. And when I started looking at the 12 steps and the greater power and so on, it just didn't work for me. So I kind of picked away at it a little bit, thought that's not for me. And I didn't think there were any other routes other than perhaps going to the doctor or checking into rehab. Yeah. And, you know, and then, I mean, when I talked at This Naked Mind Live, I talked about labels and, you know, things like alcoholic and recovery. And I absolutely hate those labels. And I know that they work for some people, and some people are actually motivated by the term alcoholic and in recovery. And that's great. If that works for them, that's fine.
Yeah.
But to me, in recovery sounds like I'm sick or I'm suffering from an illness. Yet since I've quit drinking, I've become...
You're well.
Yeah, not the best version of myself I've ever been.
Yeah, yeah.
Recovery. Yeah. You know, so, when I started hearing, oh, you know, spend your life in recovery and this sort of thing, it just didn't really work for me. And then thankfully, as you say, there are so many amazing, inspirational, wonderful people sharing their work, Club Soda, This Naked Mind, so many, Sober Love. They're just all sharing their stories and giving something back to people.
Yeah.
There's so many other ways that you can come at this.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I think we should stress, I mean, of course, AA works, as you say, brilliantly for some people, actually. And also the sense of community for some people is amazing, to actually have somewhere to physically go and meet other people. I think there's a beauty in that. But as you say, everything is opened up so massively. Now, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot are the, as we've just sort of slightly touched on, the positive benefits. And there are so many positive benefits. We could do literally a whole show just on the benefits. And you know, as you say, you look better, you feel better, you just everything. I'm convinced I've got younger. that's my line. You know, but I really do think, you know, the benefits are absolutely incredible. However, I think it's also really important to remind people listening that it isn't all completely rosy and, you know, rainbows and unicorns from day one. And you touched very briefly there on, you know, some of the tears and the difficulties. I mean, what were the most difficult bits for you at the beginning, and how did you get through them?
Yeah, I completely agree. And funny, I wrote a couple of blog posts on this very topic around, because I recognize that first month is probably the hardest period. It's a massive life change. For me, I was drinking every day for over 20 years. The only days I didn't drink was when I was in hospital for an operation, or if I was laid up in bed with the flu and I physically couldn't get my hands on some wine. And I probably would have done if I'd managed to make it out of bed. But the real challenges at the start, sleeping was really tough. you know, I used to think that the wine helped me sleep. So, which I suppose it knocked me out, sure, but I wasn't getting proper restful REM sleep like I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
But there was you have lots of emotions in those early couple of weeks. Things can be up and down. You can feel agitated, heightened anxiety. You can go from feeling really happy one minute to feeling pretty low the next. And of course, you will have cravings and desires to drink. If you're engaging with lots of Facebook groups and sober connections on social media, you're going to have stuff popping up on your feed. So you're thinking about alcohol all the time. You're probably putting in the work and reading alcohol books. So it's constantly on your mind. Mm. So, but the great news is it fades and it gets easier and easier. And yeah. I work really hard with the people that I work with, trying to educate them around, instead of running away with negative thoughts and negative self-talk, really becoming mindful about it and just pausing for a moment and stopping and thinking. You don't have to be more like a detective at a crime scene, looking at the information rather than you know, jumping into the fast-flowing river of thoughts and getting washed away with it,
which is so true.
Easier said than done, but it's true.
I mean, I remember when, you know, for me, you know, you've described it really, really well, that feeling of almost rawness. I felt chaotic. You know, I did not feel grounded at all. And, you know, very up and down, and the emotions were all over the place. Sleep was terrible. You know, and it's sort of halfway through that kind of period, you think, why am I doing this again? What on earth is this going on? But now, you see, looking back, I now realize that I could have made it a lot easier for myself if I had connected properly, because I didn't, kept it all completely secret, didn't tell a soul, which was ridiculous, I now know. But I had that sense of guilt and shame, which again is mad. But, you know, number one, I should have connected with people. So that's, you know, as you say, that's fantastic that there's stuff out there now. But also I now realize, and the work that I'm trying to do is helping people to recognize that the whole brain chemistry is out of whack. When you've been boozing all those years, you know, you probably haven't been getting fantastic nutrition in, or at least any nutrition you have been getting in has been knocked out by the booze. And so actually, literally, you have to recalibrate, because both your body and mind don't know whether they're coming or going, because you're probably massively lacking in serotonin and dopamine and all of these, you know, these brain chemicals. So it really is a tricky time. But I suppose the message that you would sort of pass on is that, particularly if people are thinking of doing one of these months, you know, if it's a dry January or go sober for October, or, you know, is don't just do the month, because you really have got to see the benefits beyond the 30 days, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I say to people that sobriety is the gift that keeps on giving, and it really, really does. So far, and there's so much to me. I use the term sober, and some people don't like that term, some people love it. But for me, it's like a lifestyle, it's a journey of self-discovery. And
yeah,
I think a lot of us have, if we're honest, we've put alcohol before the most important things in our life. I know I put alcohol in front of sometimes going out with my son and doing family things that are much healthier and more rewarding, and so many other things, my career, my health. And it's those things that come over the longer term. That first month is really, to me, just about, as you said, recalibrating and resetting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you sort of find yourself after 4 to 6 weeks in a place where things start to settle. You do start to feel grounded, a little bit more at peace and a little bit happier. And that's where you can really kick on and start seeing the benefits.
And what would you, how did you deal with the social stuff? This is often the question that people ask first is, well, how am I going to ever go out again? How am I going to have fun? How am I going to, you know, if you're on the dating scene, how am I, you know, all of these questions. I mean, actually, over time, I think most people find that it's nowhere near as scary as they think it's going to be. Actually, most people, after the initial, you know, when you say, well, actually, I'm not drinking, or I'd like a sparkling water rather than a wine, people just mostly let you get on with it, I've found. But what's been your experience as the in of the whole kind of social connection thing?
So I was really nervous about that first social event, and I kind of hid away from anything that involved booze for about four, 8 weeks, maybe the first couple of months. I just didn't want to go where I might be tempted until I felt strong enough. So my first sort of piece of advice for anybody is just not to do anything like that until they feel ready in themselves.
Yeah.
When I did go, I made sure I was with somebody who knew what I was doing, who was supportive of me, and who I could talk openly to about it. And I think that's really important. And then the other thing that I still do now is I visualize ahead of time. So if I was going to a fancy dinner, which was actually the first thing I went to, was a gala dinner at my son's school, and I knew there would be free champagne and wine flowing everywhere, I sat down, I closed my eyes, and I visualized how that would be. Everything from parking the car to getting out to walking up to what drink I was going to ask for. And I just played it all through in my mind. I wrote some of it down in my journal. And then the next day I compared it and looked at how it actually was for me. And that visualization strategy works so, so well. And the other things I have done, I've called venues to find out what zero alcohol options they've got.
Yeah.
At the Christmas party every year, when it says any allergies or diet.
Yeah, dietary requirements, absolutely.
I'll put it down. I'll say.
Yeah, me too. Although, do you find you actually get anything nice? Because I did that literally last week. I went to an event at the Savoy Hotel in London, and I made a big thing of putting that on my dietary requirements. I mean, in fairness, they had some elderflower cordial or something, you know, so I suppose it was something, but it wasn't what I wanted. Fabulously grown up, you know. But but you're absolutely right, we should make much more of a thing. What's your view on the certainly in the UK, the rise in popularity of alcohol free drinks has been absolutely incredible, hasn't it, over the last couple of years?
It's amazing. I mean, I was in the routine of drinking every evening, and I still found that I needed to fill that void and have a grown-up drink. And it was wonderful exploring all these new flavours and tastes and choices that we've got in the UK. When I've been over, I mean, I do a lot of live Facebook Q&A sessions for This Naked Mind. And when I'm talking in the groups, a lot of the audience are in the US. And
they don't have the same choice, do they?
You know, and when I've been over there, there's nothing.
It's bizarre, isn't it, that we're ahead of the States?
It's about the only thing I think we are.
But apart from kombucha, they're really good on kombucha.
Yes.
But a lot of the other drinks, you're right, they really don't have anything like this. I think they've got a few alcohol-free beers, but they don't have the amazing gin alternatives that we have here.
Yeah, like the botanicals. But it's happening. I was contacted by a company called Monday Gin, who are launching in the US, and it's very similar to the brands you see over here, the Cedars, the Utopias. For me, that's been a really, really big tool in my journey, because I can still have a nice chunky glass, a grown-up drink. It doesn't matter that there's not alcohol in it. I forget. It's got a slice of lime, tonic water, and it feels grown up, and it's in a nice bottle.
How do you feel it's helped your relationships? Because again, you know, as well as the social connections, people often find one of the very tricky issues is relationships. You know, if their partner, you know, drinks, and of course you are drinking buddies, everything shifts and shapes, and it can be very, very tricky for people. How has that been for you?
Exactly as you describe. My wife and I used to drink red wine every evening, and she was so, so supportive of me. And you're right, it's a question I get asked all the time. Particularly, it can be a challenge when a partner doesn't want to be supportive, or they don't want to change their own habits. And I always say to people to lead by example. You can't force someone to do something that they don't want to do. You've got to let your actions do the talking in this. And then over time, normally they'll see all these amazing changes, and then they'll want a piece of the action too. Yeah. And that was very much what happened with my wife. Over a period of time, she started looking at her own drinking. I think it makes people hold up a mirror to their own relationship with alcohol.
Yeah.
And she took she was never a massively heavy drinker. It was always me who had 85% of the wine box, and she had a glass. Yeah. But she moved on to drinking a zero alcohol Prosecco during the week, and she just has regular Prosecco at the weekends, which is fine. So she's really been quite thoughtful. She doesn't drink red wine, which is my go-to drink. But the biggest relationship that has changed for me is with my son. And particularly this year, he faced some challenges around his gender and his sexuality, and the drinking me would never have dealt with them in the way that the sober me has, because I'm so much more mentally resilient and grounded now. I just felt like I was a proper dad, and we've been on a journey with it. We've tried to enjoy the experience of the things that's happening for him and in his life.
Yeah.
You know, the old me would have probably had a meltdown and buried my head in the sand.
Yeah, numbed out. It's so true. As I think, I really think for parenting, it's one of the best tools you're going to ever have, is to, you know, to enable you to be present for your kids. It really is amazing. And you're absolutely right. You know, as I often say in my sober club group, there's people who have challenges. Of course they do, because being sober doesn't mean that crap won't happen in your life, or you know, or challenges or whatever will still come at you. Of course it will. But the difference is the resilience. It really is that that focus and that clarity, isn't it? So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, describe that really well.
Go on.
No, carry on.
I often say to people that, you know, you still, as you said, you still get tough things that are going to come up, but you're seeing things without that false armor of alcohol. You can see things for what they really are. You're fully present. You can make calm, clear decisions about things. Mm. And you don't react, or I don't react like I used to. I used to have childish meltdowns about the silliest of things.
Everything was a drama.
Everything was a drama.
Everything's a drama. It's so exactly true. Yeah, I do feel much more calm. It's very true. Tell us a bit about the book then, Simon. What's in it? What will we get from the book?
So I never set out to write a book, but when I quit drinking, I found there were lots of books out there that were either a memoir style or a how to quit drinking book, which was great. And some of them really helped me, some of them really inspired me. But I didn't feel there was anything that set people up for the long term, that dealt with all the things that come up as you go forward on the journey. So I put together a book that is part memoir and shares some stories. Some make you cry, some will make you laugh. And then I also put in all the tactics that I used and that I learned to help people quit drinking. So it's got those sort of ingredients. But the second half of the book is very much around all the things that come up over the longer term in the years that follow. So how do I go to a wedding without drinking? How do I go on holiday without drinking? I've quit drinking, my partner won't stop. And it's chapter by chapter. So it's almost like a dip-in guide as things happen in your life that you can refer back to. Just before that first all-inclusive sober holiday,
you can read
that chapter and prepare yourself and take the necessary steps.
Great, love it. So tell us your website then, Simon, and where we can get the book.
Yeah, sure. So my website is besober.co.uk.
And we can get the book there as well, or I guess it's Amazon. And
yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to check the book out, you can actually get the first 10 chapters for free on the homepage of the website. You just put your email address in and I'll send them over. And there's links to Amazon on there where you can get the book. You know, if you've got Amazon Prime, it'll turn up the next day.
Sounds great. Simon, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Janie. Awesome talking to you.
So thanks, Simon. And I just wanted to give a mention again to our retreat, our wellness break, if anyone is around in January. And maybe you want to ask for a nice Christmas present, a really nice Christmas present. Get all your friends to club together and treat you. It's at Champneys in Tring, and it's January the 11th and 12th. And as I'm sure you know, if you've ever been to a Champneys spa, the facilities are amazing. It's proper luxury. It's really lovely. And obviously everyone is welcome. So you can bring partners and whoever you want. It's going to be totally non-judgmental, and you can enjoy all of the facilities as well as the stuff that we're going to pack in our sessions on getting and keeping the buzz without the booze. We're going to have some relaxation, a little bit of EFT. It's going to be quite a bit on self-care, and I hope it's going to be a great event, a great weekend. So if you can make it, we do have some tickets left for that, do have some spaces. I think I mentioned that when the sales first went up, there was an error on Champneys' website, and so it didn't look as though rooms were available, most of the standard rooms. It only looked as though you could hire a suite or something, the presidential suite or whatever. But it was just an error, and they've sorted it out now. So if it is something you're interested in, go and take a look. So it's January the 11th and 12th. It's at Champneys in Tring in Hertfordshire. And if you go to thesoberclub.com, you'll click on events. You'll be able to get a direct link from there. It'd be fantastic to see some of you there. And just a reminder that all the podcasts, you can listen to all the podcasts at thesoberclub.com. Obviously, you can read all the blogs there as well, and you can sign up to be on our mailing list if you're not already and get a free PDF. And obviously, if you want to join the Sober Club, you just press click to join. It would be absolutely amazing to have you as part of our tribe. We were talking earlier about staying connected, and it really is amazing how people, you know, join the club and find, I mean, there's some amazing stuff there. There really is. But it's not just the content that I've provided there and other experts. It's very much the connection between people going through similar stuff. And there's always someone a little bit behind you, and there's always someone ahead of you, you know, whatever stage you're at. I really have tried to make this resource work for people who are just at day one and they've made the decision and they're going to do this. And then people who are, you know, year three, year four, because there's always something you want to work on. And very much my thing is the holistic approach. And what we've seen so beautifully is that, you know, there's always someone who's got a shared experience and can help you out with how you're feeling. And just having someone else hear you is amazing, absolutely amazing. Not to mention the various tips and ideas. We've got some great stuff in there. And as you know, most of our podcast guests also provide some bonus content, which goes out to our members. So in fact, there's a nice little bonus piece from Simon Chappell on prepping for a sober holiday, which is perfect just before Christmas time. And there's, as you well know, there's lots in there on nutrition and all of that stuff. So you're very welcome to join us if you'd like to in the Sober Club. And coming up then in the next few weeks, I've already mentioned that I've got Dale Pinnock, the medicinal chef. He's just so knowledgeable about nutrition more generally, but also, you know, exactly what you should put back, the good stuff you should put back when you've ditched the booze. He's very realistic as well. You've probably seen Dale on TV, and he, you know, he's written some great books. He's got another new book out. And Dale's very kind of down to earth. So he'll suggest really, really simple recipes. You know, you don't have to kind of search high and low for unique ingredients. They're relatively simple stuff, but he makes them, finds a way of making them absolutely delicious. So so that's Dale. And then also got an interview with Star Keshava, who is a woman I've known for absolutely years. In all the years I've been doing the kind of holistic beauty stuff, Star has also been working in that kind of arena, and she's developed this amazing facelift diet, which is a great name. So she's going to be inspiring us around great nutrition, particularly with regard to kind of aging well and great skincare, which is something I haven't touched on much, but it is my main thing. So I'll get to it at some point. Anyways, don't forget, you can find everything you need at thesoberclub.com. If you haven't already, make sure you follow me on Instagram at Janie Lee Grace. And I'm on Facebook as well. And, you know, all the usual places. And I don't know if I've said this for a bit, but you know, it's a massive thing you're doing if you're ditching the booze. It really is everything. So pat yourself on the back. Remember, great self-care, and give yourself a big hug. And I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jenny Lee Grace. Please go to thesoberclub.com. Listen to more podcasts, read our blogs, enter our competitions, grab yourself a free PDF, Self-Care in Sobriety, and check out our online community,